perception is reality, and in the role that is bestowed upon him, it puts a lot of pressure. Cases where he had to think about life and death sentences that he had to give. Focus on the learning, focus on the things that will kind of help put tools in your toolbox, make you a better leader no matter what, and then you can kind of pursue the thing. One technique I'd offer as just a suggestion is sit down every single year and assume you're going for an interview. Because a lot of times we get into a rat race, right? We're doing things for the sake of doing it. The so what question doesn't kind of, we don't ask, what did I achieve? What outcomes, what needle did I actually move? What meaningful difference did I actually bring versus my job description of I went in every day and did it?
Welcome to the Indianist Podcast, a show about leaders of Indian origin who have overcome challenges and worked with dedication to ultimately achieve success. By telling the stories of the defining milestones in their journeys, we hope to inspire others to learn how they, too, can succeed in their pursuits. Here's your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the Indianist Podcast, where we share stories of success from leaders and changemakers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together. Every story is unique. I am thrilled to welcome Anjana Harvey, Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer of BJ's Wholesale Club. Anjana has been a trailblazer in digital transformation, leading global initiatives across Fortune 500 companies. Her journey through pharmaceutical, healthcare, and retail sectors, managing teams across 60 countries, is truly inspiring. However, what fascinates me most is how she's consistently broken barriers while remaining committed to creating diverse, inclusive workplaces and mentoring the next generation of leaders. Welcome, Anjana. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Indianist Podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Anjana, we do this podcast to obviously share your life story because all of us, especially leaders like you, are always looking forward and moving at 200 miles an hour. Sometimes it's important to look back because your past can help you and also help a lot of others. So this is also a learning moment for a lot of our folks. So given that, can you take us back to your roots? Where did your journey begin? Where were you born? And tell us briefly about your parents, if there were grandparents, etc., in the whole mix.
Sure, Sanjay. Happy to. It's nice to take a trip back memory lane here. So I was born and brought up in Bangalore, India. So that was where I was born. Lived there for a number of years, but my father was a judge, so he was in the judicial service, and so that got us to move a lot. So even though I was born, spent the initial formative years, a couple of years in Bangalore, we ended up initially traveling through the through Karnataka, because that was where my father was a judge initially. And so we went to places like Dharwar, Mangalore, Mandya, so kind of traveled around. And then later he became a high court judge in Mumbai. So we ended up going to Mumbai and spent another few years there. So early part, as I reflect back, wonderful memories of kind of being really close to the family. I think moving got us to be that sort of close-knit family because we were away from the extended family in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. I only have one brother. So again, fairly small family there. And my grandparents, so unfortunately, my father's side, my father's father passed away very early. So I didn't get to know him. He was a freedom fighter, really did a lot. So it kind of the history sort of really helped me as I was growing up to learn about our heritage, the importance of our culture. All of this really came quite strongly from that part of the family. And on my mother's side, my grandfather, whom I got to really get to know him and my grandmother as well a lot more, really, I would say, huge influence in my life and kind of really helping us and pushing the barriers of how do we leverage and learn from one another? How do we start to give the right sort of importance to helping women grow? So he was a huge proponent of kind of, and a huge supporter, I would say, of helping that in those days, it wasn't as common. And so even when he was growing up, he was a huge supporter of women. And so listening to all of that, I think really had a big influence on me as I was growing up.
Well, fantastic. Lot to unpack there, Anjana. So first aspect is you moved a lot within Karnataka. You know, I'm relatively familiar with a lot of those places, having spent a bunch of time there. So when you were moving around, were you changing schools and building new friendships? Now, that can be exciting and it can be also challenging because you leave old friends behind and old circumstances behind and move to new places, even though children are generally quick to adapt. Was that, in your memory, was those good experiences or challenging experiences?
Yeah, so I would say really good experiences as I think back. Now, certainly there's a little bit of a loss of continuity and kind of being in a place, Sanjay, right? When you stay in one place for your entire high school or middle school and high school, if you're in one place, you have very deep friendships. So I did give up a little bit of that, but I think I made up for really getting to know so many more different people that I don't think I would have had the opportunity to get to know if I hadn't actually moved. So, and I did keep some of the friendships as I went along. So it wasn't like it was brand new friendships every single place. So I think it taught me a lot. And it's interesting you asked me that question because if I fast forward our life, and I know we'll touch upon this, I have two kids and we've moved a lot in the U.S. as well. And so my kids have had a very similar sort of experiences of moving. And I've seen it both through my own lens as well as my kids. And I would say it's really helped them as well. I think I've seen it maybe more. I'm self-reflecting on my own career now or my own experience. But as I saw it through the lens of my children, I think it taught a lot about how do you sort of enter a new place and be confident in yourself? How do you make new friends? How do you enter sort of environments and kind of being able to thrive in those places? So I think it taught me a lot. I think I gained, I would argue I gained more than I lost perhaps in kind of staying in one place. But I do think it had a pretty significant influence in shaping who I am and how I've kind of continued in my journey. And I think I see that same exact experience with my kids as well.
So that's an important point for our listeners, you know, because they sometimes you have to move to a new place on a personal basis, or sometimes you have to move to a new company or a new work environment. When you now you've done this as a child and you're saying you've done it also professionally, what does one need to kind of from a mentally, emotionally have that you can have a successful transition? Because let's just take schools. There are already cliques that are there, okay? And you know, teen years can be very, very difficult to kind of break into those cliques. Or you go into a work environment. Well, there are institutional, whether you want to call it groups or methods of doing business, you come in as a complete outsider. So take both those examples from your past and your not so, you know, from your recent past. How do you suggest to our listeners, how can they deal with something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Sanjay. And I think it's really, change is not easy. Transitions, any type of a transition, to your point, I think you can apply this to work transitions, to even within a company, if you change roles, as well as certainly moving, is a pretty significant transition here. While it's not easy, I think the way at least I've tried to approach it is really coming to the new place and listen and learn, and certainly slightly different aspects, whether you're thinking about it personally or professionally. But I think it's a lot of, it is just first understanding the environment, listening to people, absorbing things, and then kind of thinking about how do I fit in? How do I make sure I draw the connections, the correlations that help you sort of build that new bridges? Because it's new bridges you have to build, right? New connections. They probably have all a set of norms. As a leader, I've come in, I sometimes have to change the norms. But before I change, because change for the sake of change is not important, is not correct, listen, understand, and then you can kind of explain why perhaps a change needs to happen. So I think for me, the biggest, I would say, Sanjay, as I think about it, is kind of taking the time to understand, seek to understand first, and then think about either the change you have to make to fit in, which many, many times I've had to, because every company has its own culture, its DNA that you sort of have to fit into, or you help slightly change and shift that DNA to kind of help to morph it. So I think that's probably the biggest advice I would say, is kind of being open and then kind of thinking about the linkages that you can make. And I think it's all about, it's human connections. If you really think about even work, at the end of the day, it's a group of us coming together to achieve some purpose of things. And so thinking about how you can draw human connections, I think, is probably the most significant and most important component of this. And change gives you an opportunity to rethink and reimagine how those things could happen.
So, Anjana, for our listeners, what you're saying is listen and learn.
Yeah.
And then build human connections so that you can then, when you do make those changes, the change management becomes a little easier. Because firstly, you're making data or right decisions based on your listening and learning, and not just, because there are leaders who go in and say, let me just break things to set a tone and a message. And what you're saying is that probably is not the best approach. Those are very good lessons. So again, we'll just go back to your past. The other thing is, dad was a judge. You know, that is a pretty, firstly, it's a very high esteemed profession. There's a lot of people who, you know, pay respect to them. Was the house full of people who wanted to see him, you know, engage with him? And then how was he in, did he have time for you in terms of your, whether it's academics or other things, etc.? Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely, Sanjay. So I would say, really, it's being a judge, especially in India, and for folks who are perhaps listening and seeing the U.S. judicial system, comparing it to the Indian judicial system is a little bit different. There is no jury in India. It's really the judge. So it is a very important sort of role, because you're kind of sitting in judgment of whatever the case may be. A very public figure. So definitely, you're right. That came with a lot of it for my father, from kind of being known everywhere and limelight. And I think it taught us a lot as well, Sanjay. So my father, while he had that highly, highly integrity, I think was probably, I don't think I've ever come across anyone with a higher integrity than my father. And for him, he always said this, which has stuck in my mind. He said, perception is reality. And in the role that is bestowed upon him, he is just a custodian of that role that he was taking. It puts a lot of pressure, especially for sort of cases where he had to think about life and death sentences that he had to give, right? So there were some simpler cases and more complex ones. And so you can't take that lightly in kind of your, especially in somebody's life, if you have to stand in judgment. And so for him, it was really, you have to do the right job. You've got to make sure perception is reality, that even if there's an inkling or people think or feel that there may be a bias here or that you have a connection, even though it's not reality, it doesn't matter. And so growing up, he really felt he had to make sure that he was not in any shape or form, even if it's attending a function where there might be somebody out there. He's like, it had nothing to do. Like, he was obviously highly above the line. But he said, I don't care. I don't want anyone to ever connect any dots to be able to say. So it brought some level of, while he was a public figure, we sort of really had to think about how we had our social life or what we could do socially. And so it taught me a lot in kind of just observing, seeing and watching him and how he did it, and did it in a fantastic manner, and well respected in the community of how he did it. Was a great influence, I would say, as I looked at it. And you asked me a question of, did he have time? And so, yes, he was really busy. But the one thing I'd say, if you ask me, what did I learn from my father? Another thing is about the amount of time and care he gave everybody in his life, whether it's his family, whether it's somebody very junior in the courthouse or somebody really senior. He took care to get to know each person and genuinely cared about them, knew their name, their family. And you could feel that everybody loved him and knew that that connection was there with him. And I felt the same being his daughter, and kind of how much he took the time to get to know that. So huge influence in my life, and kind of how he role modeled the behavior that I think, a lot of it was role modeling. I don't think he actually taught me a whole lot of this in sitting down, but I could observe and I could see the value that he was bringing to the world around him, and how they respected it. And that was a pretty big influence.
The fantastic input you've given. So let's unpack it again for our audience, because they're all listening to this. You said something very important. Perception is reality.
Yeah.
That also applies to leadership roles too, because you could be appeared to be, let's just say, biased towards one set of employees versus another, one set of vendors towards another, or whatever it is.
Yes.
What did you take from there, and how are you doing it, and what are your lessons for our listeners in terms of, because leadership puts you also in those kinds of roles, and there are ethical bounds, but perception is the biggest bound that exists. So tell our listeners a little bit about that, from what Dad kind of taught you.
Yep. You're absolutely spot on. I think as leaders, whether we know it or not, whether we think people are observing or not, we are being observed. And we are role models, a good role model or a bad role model in the end, right? So it is really important to make sure. And one of the fundamentals for me is that is important as a leader is kind of truly having a very open, inclusive environment where everybody can thrive and be their best self, including whether it's vendors. I really treat them as partners. And there's a time for a tough negotiation, which I tell my vendors very lovingly. At that time, I'm going to be really strong and kind of look out for both sides, because we're both in business and we've got to kind of find the right balance there. But there's a time and place for that. And there's a time and place for how do we thrive as one organization, one group, et cetera. So I think for me, the best way is I reflect on a really deep question that you've asked. I think how I brought it into my life, I would say, Sanjay, is about kind of building that sort of really inclusive environment where every voice is heard, every person can kind of challenge one another to bring the best out of whatever is needed, the situation that we have. And that allows us not to be sort of biased to one group or the other, right? So then back to the perception component of people are watching and saying, do you think this particular group is more important than the other, or why are you doing it? So that's one method, I would say, of bringing an inclusive environment. The second one I would say is about kind of talking about why you do it. There are times, and I've had it more recently, where I've had to invest in a certain area or a certain team versus another team. Like, I'm sure we all can relate to those examples. But if you don't say it, it'll look like I'm very, very particular about this one particular data is something really important I'm investing in. So take the time to explain it, because demystify what's in your mind. Because most often it's not that you just really like this team and you just want to go. More often than not, perhaps that's a very foundational capability that the company needs, or they're underinvested in many years and therefore you need to overinvest for a few more years till you get caught up. There's typically a reason why you do things. A lot of times I've seen that many leaders don't talk about it, right? It may be in your mind. You may think it's pretty obvious, but you look at it every day. And I think connecting the dots for your organizations, helping them see the why, explaining that perhaps, and it's not even perception, it is reality that I'm investing perhaps in one area or spending more time in an area, perhaps another. It's not because I don't like the other team. It's just, or whatever the scenario is. I think taking the time to connect, explain, and being thoughtful and mindful of it, people appreciate it and can feel, yes, you know what, that's the right thing for the company. So I think those are some of the techniques that I've tried to leverage to be able to really hopefully make sure that people don't feel that you're biased in one area or the other.
So, Anjana, demystify it and talk to the people, because sometimes you have to make tough choices, maybe pick a group, a vendor per se. Anjan, not specific to you, but this is again for our listeners. If there is pressure from, let's say, leadership or somewhere else, the ownership, etc., to go a certain direction, which kind of gives a little bit more favor, etc., to a certain group, how should people who are in leadership deal with that? Have you ever had that situation? I don't want to know specifics, but again, these are all leadership lessons for our people coming from your dad. So we are really learning from Dad as to how, because he must have had a ton of pressure. Most people who either know judgeships, but in India, as she said, judge and jury is the same. He's the judge and jury, and there is a lot of pressure, but he dealt with that. So how do leaders deal with that, Anjana?
Yeah. So I'd say start with kind of core values, Sanjay. I think each one of us has a set of principles, core values. And I've tried to say, don't ever compromise those core values. That is when I think that's the line that I would not go below. But having said that, and assuming the scenarios where you're not really doing something that's unethical or kind of, again, eroding your core values, sometimes you do get pressure, and it is a reality to your point, right? There's a reason why, or there's a relationship, there's a component. So the way I try to deal with those scenarios is, it is a reality, so I can't ignore it because there is some pressure that's coming in. First, make sure it doesn't erode your core value. Second, try to see if there's a way that you can still be able to not listen to that individual or kind of the pressure that you're getting, but try to put a fairness component to it so you can bring the right people and help that person understand that in the end, it'll be a better outcome to be able to kind of put the rest of the the vendors in this case, or whatever the scenario is, through the same lens. So kind of explain, try to explain to them how it'll be beneficial for both them, their vendor perhaps, as well as the community, and try to bring that level of fairness as much as you can. In some cases, it may not even matter because it's not such a big deal, in which case, fine, maybe there's not a huge amount of... So learn how to figure out if it's the big rock or the small rock. Is it a very meaningful thing that you really have to fight for and make sure? But do it in a way to explain influence. So because if you just reject it, it's not going to go well for you, perhaps, right? It's maybe it's your boss or someone else who's giving you that sort of feedback. But I do think if you take the time to sort of understand all of the different stakeholders, kind of thinking about how do I convince and influence them to bring some level of fairness, I think most times it really works out. And if it's really, really bad, then you walk away from that situation, as I said. But a lot of times I think it requires a lot of strategic thinking process. Without that, I think you feel trapped. You feel like, oh gosh, I've got to go do something. So don't let that happen. It's all a set of moves that you have to think through, strategize, give up a little bit, give in. So there's always give and take in life. There's nothing perfect and that you can always construct. But I think that's the way I would approach it.
So listeners, Anjana has talked about some very important things. One is you identify your core values, your North Star, and stick to them. And then obviously figure out what is the fairness angle here. And then also decide if it's a big rock or small rock, because some things might not be as relevant to kind of fight on. So those are fantastic inputs. Anjana, I want to go back to your dad. There's something you said very important, that he made time for everybody. Now that is a very, either a difficult thing or a unique thing that leaders sometimes don't do that. So two questions. Firstly, I presume he was a people person, so that does help quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Everybody is not that. There are introverts in this world also. You said he made time for the smallest to the biggest person. That also applies whether you're in a corporate world, you're in your personal relationships, you're a whatever, you could be in academic world, whether you're dealing with students, you're a student, etc. How, firstly, how was he able to do it? If you're an introvert, how does one do it? And then why is it that important, whether it's in corporate or personal life?
Yeah. So let me start with why is it important? I would say it's important because at the end of the day, and from a computer science background, so technology is my sort of function, if you will. Mm-hmm. So you might say, well, I'm dealing with a lot of computers and software. I would say, no, Sanjay, it's about people. At the end of the day, anything, whether it's scientific, whether it's technology, it doesn't matter what your field is. You're dealing with people. And I think that's why this is really, really important, because if you can help, if you can build those connections, if you can make people special, which is sort of how I felt my dad made every single person unique, special in their own ways, regardless of titles, regardless of where and what in the ecosystem they were part of. I think it's very special. It goes a long way, because then they will bend backwards to do things for you, right? We all do. If you feel good about something, you're going to go the extra mile. So you get, there's a lot of give and take. And so there's a lot of good business reasons why to do it. There's a lot of personal reasons why, because you get to learn about people. You have fun doing it. It's not, and you can kind of go far. If not, if you're going alone, you're only going to go that far, right? As a team, as a group, you can go a whole lot. So there's a lot of good business reasons for why it's the right thing to do. But having said that, it's not easy, right? This is the part that I think is probably harder for introverts versus extroverts. And I would say I'm actually an introvert. So it does take a lot of more energy from you to be able to doing it. And so I think there's ways to think about doing it. For me, it's the one-on-one I find much easier versus if it's in large groups to doing it. So find the method that actually helps you, that makes it easier for you to connect with people, right? We all have our own methods of connecting, whether it's through a phone call, whether it's through emails, whether it's through just one-on-one lunches, maybe easier for you. I think there's methods that are comfortable in yours. So be authentic to who you are, because I don't think overnight we can kind of become someone else we just magically want to. But I wouldn't let that come in your way. I would challenge you to kind of think through, is there ways you can leverage your own strengths to be able to still make those connections, and giving yourself time to perhaps re-energize yourself. Maybe your energy battery is drained and you want to have different ways of connecting with people. But it is really, really important because of what I said, right? So it's people who make it. And it took me a while, I would say, in my own professional career, Sanjay, to realize that, and I call it the power of many, right? There's only that much one individual person can do, but you can have this multiplication factor if you're able to drive a team. Just imagine how much you can multiply if you have a team of 10 or rather than a team of one to doing it. And so there's huge benefits to doing it, but how you do it, I think, is important because otherwise you're going to get a very tactical, just what's needed. And I think it goes into what I observed with my dad of being like that really special, like make each person feel good about themselves, that you care. Even as simple as remembering everyone's name, calling the person by their name, remembering their family. It was little things that he did that I think made that person feel like you cared. I'm not just a cog in the wheel. I'm not just another person in that sea of people that you interact with. And I think those are kind of the things that I've taken back and tried to incorporate. I don't know how successful I've been, but I try my best to kind of take those nuggets of learning in my own journey as well.
No, but that's fantastic. So for our listeners, what you're saying is it's very important. Everybody has their own way of doing it. As if you're an introvert, find the mechanism, as you said, maybe it's one-on-one, but take the time in getting to making that each person feel special. You know, there was a saying that Bill Clinton had a unique gift that when he talked to you, it felt like you were the only person in the world that mattered to him. And that was his special gift. So make that happen, and you can do it in your own way, whether it's knowing the names, birthdays, etc. I think those are great advice. Anjana, we've talked about your dad. We've not yet gotten to mom yet. So tell us just briefly to us and our audience, because she obviously must have played an important role too, and she's the, you know, family builder in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, huge influence. So actually, both my parents had very different ways as I unpack this that my mom had. So she really was a huge influence in a couple of ways. So the first, I would say, she was my biggest cheerleader and still is to this day, but equally helping me to push myself to be the better version of myself every single day. So what I learned from her was kind of focusing on how do I improve myself and not improve myself to compete with someone else, but compete with myself. How do I become 1% better every day? What can I learn? What can I observe? She did this all role modeling because even today I see her kind of constantly curious, learning, looking out for what can I take? How do I connect the dots? How do I push myself to learn? So she was a homemaker. She was educated, did really well, but during those times and with my dad's career moving, et cetera, she decided not to pursue a career, but she put everything into us. So she would be thrilled and thriving with learning from what's happening at school, even at work. Even today, she asks me everything that's happening. And even though she's not working in a corporate world, she can take lessons from what I'm talking about it, give me advice, but also learn back into, oh, I can incorporate this. That ability, I think, is what I've learned. And I think it's relentless self-improvement, kind of constantly critiquing or looking at yourself from an internal perspective. And I said, not competing externally, but internally. So that was a huge lesson that I think has been fantastic. I think it's gone a long way in kind of helping me push myself outside my comfort zone, which is what a lot of times it's had to be. So I think that's really, really big. And I think the second one, Sanjay, is learning. So it kind of goes back to this curiosity and learning and just being a sponge, like reading a lot, kind of looking out for things. That's another thing that I think I've really learned from my mom. And I kind of say it's a serial learner. There's never a day, never a moment that you can learn. So those are probably, if I have to just pick out a few things that I think have really shaped me from very early on days, I think those are the characteristics that I've learned from her.
So pushing yourself to compete against yourself, just be better today than you were, a little bit better than you were yesterday. And then being a learner, they kind of both go hand in hand, to be frank with you. How was he able to do it? Because sometimes with kids, it can be hard. And that also applies to in the workforce we have today. The world is changing so fast. If you don't keep pace, if you're not learning, and if you're not staying up, you're going to become obsolete. So let's just say your mom was able to do it for you. Now we have moms and dads who are listening. How was she able to kind of you know, get that message to you. And there are managers, leaders who are trying to say, hey, I want my employees to invest in the most important thing, which is themselves, because that's your biggest asset. So how was she able to do it? And how have you taken that lesson with what you are doing? How do you, you know, keep up? How do you get people who either work with you for you to kind of do that? Tell our listeners a little bit.
Yeah. So I would say with my mom, I think, and I think she got this from her dad, actually, as I trace back the, I think we all learned from each other. So my grandfather used to always say, he would come and listen to it. Like we were little kids and he would say, I want to learn from you. He'd apologize to us. He'd say, So the things that you normally don't see in a, at least in an Indian family, sometimes like the grandfather knows it all. Mm-hmm. That was never there in our family, Sanjay. So my grandfather would be like, oh my God, there's so much to learn from you kids. He would always say that. And my mom said that too. He used to say, I have donkey's ears, my dear. I've got to learn from you what's happening in the world around. And my mom had has had the same sort of influence in kind of picking out and saying, being curious. I think a lot of it comes back to curiosity.
In
a pursuit, to your point, I think they're very related. In a pursuit to learning allows you to then self-reflect. So sometimes we do learning and it stops there. Curiosity is great. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But how do you apply it to yourself, I think, is the last thread that sort of is a full circle when you think about it, that then you get the full power of what you've learned, right? So I think she role modeled it again, very similar to my dad. I don't think I ever got a lecture of you've got to go do this or why are you not doing this? I don't recall a whole lot of those types of scenarios, but a lot of it was her applying the learning. So my brother would come, finish his MBA, and she would be reading all of those articles. And these were business articles. She's not a working professional. But she was absolutely fascinated debating with him and kind of thinking through. And that goes a long way in kind of, and then she would try to incorporate that in the activities that she was doing. So full circle now is I pull the thread and kind of do it. The kind of a few things I would say is I've tried to do it in my career, Sanjay, is one technique I'd offer as just a suggestion is sit down every single year and assume you're going for an interview. Because a lot of times we get into a rat race, right? We're doing things for the sake of doing it. The so what question doesn't, kind of, we don't ask, what did I achieve? What outcomes, what needle did I actually move? What meaningful difference did I actually bring versus my job description of I went in every day and did it, right? Mm. So not to say that I'm encouraging everyone to go interview every year. That's not my intention. But try to put that lens through to say, if I sat down and I had to update my resume right now and I say, here's the things that I was able to move or I want to move next year, it forces you to really have that in your mind. Not that you need to move, but you can create the environment of saying, I want to be self-introspective. I want to sit down and actually want to think about meaningful things I've done or what can I change? What skills did I learn? What did I achieve for the business outcome? You could do it personally for yourself to say, what did I achieve? So I think that's one method of kind of really deep, deep self-introspection every single year, professionally or personally. Mm. One of the other things I did as I was doing my MBA and one of our professors kind of gave this feedback on do a 360 of your life. Like start asking, we do 360s, I think a lot of folks do in the business world. And kind of think about that with your entire life and ask people, how are you doing? So one of the things I incorporated this early on was asking my kids, how am I as a parent? I had never done that before. I said, how would you how would you score me? And I'll tell you this experiment I started. It was probably about 15 years ago when I did my MBA and I came out. Every single year I do this Sunday. So I sent out a survey to my two kids. And we do it on our wedding anniversary, both my husband and I, on parenting. So we want to know. So we ask them to score us on a scale of 1 to 10. And we ask them to tell us what is going well. What do you think we're meeting their needs as a parent? What is the expectation of a parent? And how well are we meeting that? And what else could we do better? I cannot tell you how brutally honest and fabulous the feedback is. Fabulous. I cannot even tell you. No sugarcoating. I get straight out a really, really strong, fantastic feedback. And so that's another method. Like, so you could do that with your team. You could do that at work. You could do it at home. But it's been a great way of kind of forcing us, myself, my husband as well, to take a step back and think about how we're doing and what could we do better. And I did that with my in-laws. I did that with my family and friends. It is funny. And I reached out to my brother, like, am I a good sister? What is your expectation? And am I meeting your needs? And I realized we never asked that question. I don't know about you, but I had never actually asked that question to actually get a real response that told me how good or bad I was meeting expectations. So anyway, those are a few ideas to kind of get things started off.
Wow. I'm afraid to ask that question. That's my problem. because as you said, kids can be brutally honest or sometimes very brutally honest. So I'm very, very afraid to ask the question. But I think you're touching on something, two very, very important points. One is, you know, an evaluation, as you said, at the end of the year, as if you're going for an interview. That's a great idea. Because what happens is you're in this position for a year, 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. It kind of, I wouldn't say get in a rut, but you say, hey, man, I achieved this and I put my strategic plan together. Whatever, if you're an academic, because our listeners are academics, they're students, etc. But to really, what you're saying is, you know, if you were to go in for an interview, kind of in an interview, people say, don't tell me what you did, what did you achieve?
Yeah.
They don't want to know the activity. They want to know the results.
Yep.
So what you're saying is put that down, because a lot of people don't have never done their resume for years and years and years. But that's a fantastic. But then you have to be critically objective about yourself. That's the hard part.
That is the key. Yes.
Yeah.
Not just for the sake of putting down a foot. This is not just updating your resume for the sake.
Resume.
It's really pushing hard to say, what meaningful difference did I actually deliver this year? That I had achieved across all of the different spectrums, and being truly, exactly to your point, Sanjay, being critically honest, but using that framework as a method of asking yourself the questions, right? Not necessarily, because those are the real tough questions that people are rightfully looking from the outside to say, what did you actually, how did you move the needle? That's what at the end of the day is important.
So what does one do with that? Let's say I did my resume and I find that I did great in this area. I didn't do so well in this, and I really sucked in this area. What do you do with something like that, Anjana, for our listeners, or for this listener? Tell me, what should I do? Because your end is coming up soon, Anjana.
Yes. Yeah. I would say it's a great way. First, it's good. Self-awareness is step one of any process. Mm-hmm. And step two, to your point, is to really think about, okay, what am I actively going to do differently? And what are my goals? So you'll be more sharper about the goals you set up for next year, because now that you know you're going to try to self-evaluate, no one else needs to see this. It's just mm-hmm. you alone kind of driving this and pushing yourself, mm-hmm. right? You're going to put a better set of goals together. You're going to say, I'm going to intentionally work on this area that I probably don't spend enough time with my customers, or whatever it may be that you're discovering as you go through this process. How am I going to meaningfully change that? So it forces you to hopefully continue. It's a continuous improvement in my mind. There's never an end. There's never good enough. It's never great. Like, right, you can constantly say, what's my next frontier? Even if you had an outstanding year, it may help you to say, what's my next tier that I want to get to, right? What does great and outstanding look like? So I'd say either way, I think it's a really, A, good way to be self-aware, but B, it gives you the tools to say, how would I start planning better? Because a lot of this is planning. To your point, many, many times we just fall into the rut of the rat race that happens, right? Yes, that is a part of our jobs. That is a rat race. That is kind of, you have to get along. But I think planning and being thoughtful about what you want to achieve, what gives you the happiness, what gives you the satisfaction of what you want to get done, it's very, very informative and kind of good planning, I would say, for the next year.
No, that's good to hear. So it allows you to plan, allows you to change what you need to do for the next year that's coming. But you're doing this evaluation at the end of each year, right?
Yes. So personally, but with the kids, we ended up picking our wedding anniversary. Yes. So we know that a slightly different time. But that's also a great reflection to say, you can ask our kids. My husband and I have both changed quite significantly, taking the real feedback.
Really?
Yes.
So just coming to that point, because I find that so fascinating. And it's not just children. You asked your friends, you asked your brother, etc. Obviously, I understand from the children's standpoint, I'm sure a lot of them like me are afraid to even ask their children. But you take that input and then you want to change yourself, change your circumstances, change behavior. Have you done it with your friends? Have you done it with your colleagues in any way?
Yep. So definitely, I have. So I did it in even a fairly formal process. With the kids, it's a formal process. So I actually have written feedback. So I can go back and I can't actually just say I winged this, right? So actually, it scores and I'm gone.
You use SurveyMonkey. You use SurveyMonkey.
Yes, I did. Virtually. Except when the kids were. So I started this when my son was like 6 and 7. And you may think a six-year-old cannot answer such questions. Obviously, he didn't type it in those years. I was transcribing and capturing the notes. Mm. But it is so insightful. My 6 and 7-year-old, it is amazing the feedback they gave me in their own words, obviously, not as super polished as perhaps the words they give me now that they're much more grown up. But it's as insightful still as this. So I think the formality sort of helped. I don't think I've kept the formality with my kids a little bit as in the process. With my other relatives, it's not been, or colleagues, it hasn't been that formal since the time I did it as part of my MBA course. But anyway, but I still kind of keep that reflection in my mind. I did it as my 10th year anniversary. I did another formal process. So kind of whatever works for you, you kind of think through. But I think it's more the act of kind of asking. What I've, many times you hear this even in businesses, how often do you actually ask your customer what they want, right? That's what this is, right? So when you think about it, if you're customer-centric, we say a lot of times we're customer-centric, but quite often we don't. We presume, we think we look at the data and we assume the customer wants X and Y. But not often, many companies don't actually take the time to ask the customer to go say, what do you want in the product or whatever? I'm not saying every company, but let's always think of the same thing. It's stakeholder expectations. It's we're all supporting one another in some shape or form. And if you never ask, you may think you're doing it. And I discovered a lot of things that I thought this was the expectation of what I was or I needed to be. But it was something very different, including my mom. Like it was amazing when I had the same thing with my mom. Her expectation, as much as she really supports me to have a career and do all this, her expectation initially was that she was like worried that I was with a dual working couple, that I wasn't spending enough time with my kids. That was her biggest worry, that I was neglecting the kids perhaps a little bit. And as we went through the process, as she saw how much the kids' feedback, she really realized and said, it's quality over quantity. I am definitely, because my time with my kids is less than what I ideally would have liked, a working job and kind of not having enough time, it is so precious that I think I squeeze more value out of that, whatever little nugget we have of time. And I'm so close to my kids. And she sees how close we are. She's like, you know what? Actually, I've changed my mind. I thought you may not have been, like you were putting your career, but I've brought the kids along as part of the passion that I have. And we're all in it. And so she's changed her perception through this process. It's helped her kind of rethink or reestablish the paradigms of what it is to be a mother and kind of the expectations of a mother, I guess.
Wow, that's fantastic. So one is poor and 10 is great, right?
Yes.
Have you ever gotten a 10 from your kids?
Great question. The only year, and I'll be very honest, the only year I got was the first year when my son, who is a 7-year-old, who took the test, he gave me 1,000. I told him, it's a score of 1 to 10. What will you give your mom? He gave me 1,000. The only year I've received 1,000. Every single year, it's probably like a 7, 7.5, 7 point whatever, something like that. 8, I think I've gone is the highest, but they have not gone. Every single time I get a lot of feedback. Okay, great job on this, but you need to do this. So I've
that, was, that was the year you gave him the Nintendo box or something. Just kidding.
Exactly, I know. But that didn't work, Sanjay. That was the only year and only one of the kids gave me that score. It's always been below 10.
Below. So it's 7 is good though. Yes, 7 is
yes.
Good.
So exactly. Yes. No, I agree.
Oh, wow. This is fantastic. A lot of incredible lessons for me, especially. Anjana, so, you know, you moved around, then you moved to Mumbai. How did you transition to the US? Can you just give us a brief idea for our listeners here?
Absolutely. So I was working in Mumbai. So I started my career in Mumbai, spent about 2 or 3 years working there as a software engineer, joined a consulting firm. I was with Tata Unisys. So that's where I sort of began my career. Mm-hmm. And then I got married and my husband was already in the US. So he had come here working and we met and decided to get married. And so that brought me over to the US. And so I came over, I quit my job. And I hopefully you're starting to get to know me now. I'm like, the first thing I came over, I'm like, I need to find a job like ASAP. So anyway, in the first month, I was able to kind of land a job. And so that got me to the workforce in the US and then continued from there on.
No, that's awesome. So, Anjana, you know, our podcast is called Indianness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners, has being of Indian origin influenced your leadership style in any way?
Very much. I think my core values, mm-hmm. Sanjay, as I think about it, is very, I'm rooted in sort of the Indian heritage, the roots that sort of come with it. But certainly, without a doubt, I've curated and picked up other things, right? That's what we all do as we move and migrate from one place to the other. But at the heart of it, I certainly have a lot of core values that are really important, whether it's family and kind of really balancing out your work-life balance, things that have shaped me as I've tried to be both in my own career, but as a leader. Many of those values, whether that's hunger for knowledge and kind of the thirst for knowledge, things like that, that are so deep and ingrained in, I think, the Indian values are certainly very much part of who I am.
They're really a big part of even in your leadership style and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Very much.
You know, a lot of folks who come on this podcast talk about the role of mentors in their lives. You know, and mentors come in many, many shapes or forms.
Yeah.
Has there been some kind of a mentor in your journey? And what do you think of the role of mentors? This is, again, for our listeners who are listening to this. And obviously, self-serving, we've launched a mentor-mentee program called Gurukul. But anyway, that's a separate issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So very much, I would say they've been a huge part of shaping my life. But I would say I would broaden the aspect of mentoring to a little bit broader than what I would think of in the classic sort of work or workplace concept, Sanjay. I think mentors come in all shapes and forms. So I've had definitely mentors at work who have been really instrumental. Some who have never been anointed a mentor, but I think have really played a significant role in kind of helping shaping, sponsoring me, or kind of helping me through my career. As well as mentors in the shape of my kids, my family. So so age is not a barrier here. It's not the classic sort of sense. I would definitely call both my kids as huge mentors for me and my coaches and helping me in my career as well as and learning from them. But it's equally, I would say, mentors who have kind of really helped shape me in my early parts of my career, looking out for, I would say, maybe recognizing things in me that I didn't see myself, giving me the opportunity to be able to kind of say, let's go try this out, or we have confidence in you. Early part of my career, I remember one a mentor there who, again, really pushed me and helped me get my first sort of management role and having the confidence in me that I could, that I think I was not so sure when he reached out. And I said, I second-guessed myself for at least the night and slept over, and I kept talking to my husband on, am I being a scapegoat here? Or is this a good place for me to go raise my hands? And I'm glad I did. And I think he saw something in me that I didn't see. I think that's been very, very helpful.
So they come in all, again, for our listeners, all shapes and sizes. Your kids have been mentors and so can be of different folks. And don't be afraid of reaching out. Anjana, when you look back, I mean, I can pick up maybe one or two. Can you identify everybody's life has some key inflection points which, you know, shaped their journey? It could have gone this way, it could have gone that way. Can you, just identify maybe one or two or three journeys? Because let's just find out how you made those decisions and what, looking back, were they right, et cetera, just briefly.
Yep. So I would say I'll pick a couple, Sanjay. So the first one was a few years ago. I think, like many, I sort of had this impression of a career ladder. Like, I've got to go one step after the next. And if I do well, let me pursue the next. It was just sort of very singular in my mind. And so a few years ago, I was trying to apply for a job. It was an external CIO role that I was trying to apply for. And it was my first CIO role that I was trying to apply. And the board, when they interviewed me, all went really well. And finally, they said, the one thing that seems to be not missing in your portfolio is cybersecurity. And like, it was important, it was several years ago, that I didn't have the depth of that knowledge. I was came sort of from a different track. And so it gave me a lot to think. And then so the next time I got the opportunity at my current role, company that I had, I raised my hand and took a sort of a lateral move to go very deep into a security area. Very much outside my comfort zone because I was not a cybersecurity person that I was not going to go deep in. But it suddenly made me realize, Sanjay, on kind of, it's a lattice, not a ladder, right? So you've got to collect experiences in your life and not be very singular focused. The outcomes do come, like focus on the learning, focus on the things that will kind of help put tools in your toolbox, make you a better leader no matter what, and then you can kind of pursue the thing. So that was a very pivotal moment in kind of reflecting, helping me reshape the thinking of what I had and kind of allowing me to think about my career in that way. So that was, I think, one. The other one related back to sort of work-life balance. And so I'd moved a lot, as I think I mentioned to you, with our family. And I was getting my first public CIO, public company CIO role. And the kids were, we were in the Boston area and my daughter was in 10th grade. And so for the first time, I would say, even though I'd moved the family around quite a bit, we decided that it didn't feel right to have a 10th grade old daughter kind of move. And so I said, I'm going to give up this role. And my kids pushed me, actually. They were the ones, and my husband as well. Couldn't have done anything without him or the kids. They pushed me and said, no, we can figure this out and you can do it and you can be a traveling mom. And so I did sort of more a consulting Monday morning to Thursday nights and Friday nights commute. And so that was a very pivotal moment in kind of having sort of my kids and my husband push me into kind of saying, yes, we can do it. We can navigate any circumstances. There's ways to solving things. So it doesn't need to be black and white. Either we move or we don't move. You pursue a role or not move. Yes, did it put a lot of burden on us? Yes, it did, without a doubt. But there's ways to navigate it. So that was another inflection point in kind of thinking about how I navigate these. So those were two, but and maybe the last one I would say was really shifting my career and going from a lot of pharmaceutical that I had to my most recent role where I am right now is completely switching industries and kind of taking a bit of faith and kind of looking for the fun and excitement and learning something different. So that was another sort of an inflection point and deciding which trajectory I go in where I move things forward.
Oh, fantastic. So several learning points. You said, don't be afraid of learning something. You got, you didn't get the job that you were looking for, so you went lateral to learning about cybersecurity. That was a little bit of a risk. You could have just said, hey, I'm good, I'll keep going. But so learning, which is a core thing that you said, self-learning becomes very, very important. And then you obviously talked about, you know, having that work-life balance, but having your family or team Anjana support you in that, I think that's also an important aspect of what you're kind of talking about in terms of inflection points for people, that make sure you kind of get everybody together with you, because it really takes a team, as you said. Whether it's a team at work, team at home, or wherever else. So that makes a big difference. Anjana, has the definition of success for you changed over a period of time? I mean, now when you look back, coming out as a, you know, from Tata Unisys days to BJ's, consumer goods. But beyond that, I'm just saying.
I know, yes, quite a lot has changed. Great question. I don't know if it has changed. For me, success, Sanjay, all along has been kind of focus on the outcomes. Kind of feel good about, am I making a difference? And a difference does not mean to be I'm saving the world and I'm producing a drug and doing it, right? It could be little differences, little steps that you're taking is sort of how I've always anchored myself into kind of feeling that's the sense of happiness that I get, that I've done something that I feel nobody else needs to know or whatever, right? That's not the criteria. It's sort of how I find happiness in what I do. And when I go to bed, did I try to make something different from what I've got? I don't think that definition has actually changed. So I think that's, in general, perhaps the outcomes are 100% very different. There's no doubt. But I think the fact that I'm content and happy versus just pursuing something for the sake of like a title or have I eventually achieved those? Yes. But I don't think just for the sake of it, I don't think I've ever kind of felt it. I think that I think has stayed consistent throughout my life.
Oh, that's very important. That's great. Consistently making, have I made a difference? I think that's what you're saying. Anjana, I could go on for hours and hours with you. There's so much to learn. We'll need to get you back. But at the end, we do this lightning round of questions, just some fun stuff that gives our listeners a little bit of maybe a personal insight into you. So one word answers. You ready?
I am ready. Okay.
Okay. Remote work or office work?
Office work.
Okay. Strategy or execution?
Strategy.
Data or intuition?
data.
Books or podcasts?
Podcasts.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Fiction or non-fiction?
Fiction.
Okay. This is a question we ask everybody, Anjana, because our podcast is called Indianness. Yeah. Your definition of Indianness.
My definition of Indianness. I would say being family oriented. If I had to pick one word, I've got a couple of different aspects of being Indian, but I think for me, the family is the center of everything.
Family is the central.
Yeah.
Great definition. This is going to be a little hard one. Tell me one person, not two, who's been the most influential person in your journey. One person. I have a feeling I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you.
My mom.
Okay, I thought so. And then Nike has their tagline called Just Do It. What is Anjana's tagline?
My tagline. What a great question. I would say, imagine the possibilities, seize the moment.
Wow. Imagine the possibilities and seize the moment. I love that. Anjana, finally for our audience, based on this conversation, one specific action item you'd recommend to our listeners who are aspiring leaders?
I would say one thing, if I have to say, I would say take risks, find your passion, and go stretch yourself. You'll do amazing things and you'll be happy in life. That's, for me, the definition of success is about how happy one can be. And I think don't limit yourself. Be limitless in your thinking and push yourself.
Take risks, find a passion, and be limitless.
Yes.
Wow. Thank you, Anjana, really for sharing your amazing journey with us today. You know, your story really exemplifies how Indian values and global perspective can create transformative leadership. You know, and to our listeners, remember that success comes in so many forms, but staying true to your roots while embracing change is what truly defines the Indianness impact globally. So join us next time on the Indianness podcast as we continue to explore more inspiring stories from our community. And don't forget to subscribe and share this episode with fellow change makers in your network. Anjana, thank you so much. I might take up in sending out a questionnaire to my kids, but I'll phrase the questions in such a way that I only get at 10. No, I'm just kidding, but thank you.
We're going to compare notes. Yes.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Anjana. This has been fantastic.
Thank you, Sanjay. I really appreciate this opportunity. It's been a pleasure talking to you and kind of taking me back down the memory lane. It's been fantastic. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Indianness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future inspirational stories.